These are eggs. Quick whisk, no risk, protein punch, power lunch, bake for dinner, easy winner, fed the lot, hit the spot, eggs. And why pick up more eggs when you're shopping? Because there are more ways to enjoy them. Like bacon and mushroom fried rice with poached eggs, delicious sautéed potatoes with spinach and eggs, or everyone's favourite, a simple cheese omelette for lunch. So versatile, so nourishing. And always choose eggs with a Board Bia quality mark for the highest standards verified at every stage. Eggs, crack on.
This week on the Indo Daily.
I actually don't believe, right, that priests said or have any harm. It just, like, thought I knew. But that's how I found out Miriam Martina was dead.
How likely is it that Trump will be found guilty of paying hush money to former adult film star Stormy Daniels?
We're talking about involvement in serious drugs activity on both sides of the border, and as well as that, the procurement of weapons.
Find and follow us at all the usual spots and over on the Irish Independent website.
On this week's Big Tech Show, how will the latest developments in artificial intelligence affect your life? Will you get new powerful personal assistants? Are you in danger of something terrible happening? We explain what's going on.
Just a couple of weeks ago, Anthropic, which is OpenAI competitor, their startup lab, actually founded by former OpenAI employees, they actually eclipsed GPT-4 only just a couple of weeks ago with their latest model, and the internet went crazy. This is just better than GPT-4 at everything. So OpenAI had to respond to that.
The Big Tech Show, available on all podcast platforms.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Left Wing. Well, we are down to the final weekend of the 2024 Six Nations. Andy Farrell has named an unchanged team from the one that started the defeat to England at Twickenham last weekend. So Calvin Nash keeps his place on the wing after the return to play protocols, while Andy Farrell has gone back to a 5-3 split on the bench with Gary Ringrose among the subs. I'm Sinead Cassan and I'm joined by Keane Tracy and Rory O'Connor. Now, we are looking for some of your feedback for our podcast, and to be in with a chance to win a €500 one for all voucher, go to www.mypodcastfeedback.com. Pop in the code WING and fill out the short survey. The survey closes soon, so don't miss out. Before we get into the team, lads, have you emotionally recovered from Twickenham? Are you okay?
Oh yeah. No, it's been a fun week. I think it's been one of the most interesting weeks covering the team for some time, because it was such an interesting performance. It was so unusual. I thought Tuesday, listening to Simon Easterby pick through the bones of it, was really, you know, they were fairly open about what they felt went wrong. And going into this game, there's probably more question marks hanging over them than there has been for an awful long time. So no, we were fine. We had a debrief in Richmond after the game.
After our Helter Skelter
and then we had a morning together on the plane as well. So no, we're all good, I think.
Like, look, life and work is much better when the Ireland team are winning. That goes without say. But I agree with Rod. This week was quite interesting, even watching the game back a couple of times. It definitely re-emphasised the sense that I had when I was there at the time, that it was an unbelievable game. There was so much in it. Each time I watched it back, I was picking out different things. And in fairness, like Rod touched on there, Simon Easterby and Tadhg Byrne and Ian Henderson, who I have to say feel sorry for, was put up for media this week and not into 23 this week. But they fronted up really well and they were honest. You heard Tadhg Byrne saying how much it actually hurt watching back the review, because they could barely recognise themselves in certain things that they were doing. And I'd say it was one of those performances where the second they walked off the pitch, they were already dreading Monday morning because they knew themselves. So it was been interesting to kind of dig into the reasons behind that, whether it was their kick strategy, which I was writing about today, their line out and things like that. So they go into the Six Nations decider this weekend with some questions to answer.
So going to the team, Calvin Nash on the wing, is that the right call considering he had to go, he was off and after a few minutes, the return to play protocols and all the rest?
Well, I'm not in a position to question the Irish medical team, and you would have to assume that he has passed all of the tests that he needs to pass. He obviously didn't come back on, so that's the HIA-1, but then they go afterwards, they do HIA-2. If he passes HIA-2, there is a potential for him to play if he passes the subsequent test, which begins with HIA-3 the next day. And then he has to train and then show kind of no symptoms and come up okay. So, but within the World Rugby guidelines, Ireland are okay. I think for anyone who watched Calvin Nash take that collision and go off in the manner that he did, it's a surprise. I think it was a surprise on Tuesday when I heard he was running around. I'd ruled him out of my head. I don't think it's a great look for the tournament. I think you kind of almost juxtapose it with Emmanuel Feaboso, the English winger, ruling himself out. Now, he was symptomatic. He's obviously not feeling right. He's training to be a doctor, so he's very hyper aware probably of the ramifications of it. But, you know, we've seen this. It goes back to the 2022 tour when Johnny Sexton went off with a brain injury and then played the following week because he came through the protocols and Keane, you were there, and you guys had to kind of figure out exactly, because obviously the profile of it with Johnny Sexton was so big. But once World Rugby brought in the 12-day mandatory stand-down period for concussion, I was very comfortable with that, or kind of liked the fact that a player wasn't getting back within 6 days as he could have done in the previous iteration of it. Like Nash, obviously is reporting well. They're obviously, you know, the doctors wouldn't clear him. Ireland have a good history when it comes to standing players like Caelan Doris and James Ryan down after multiple concussions. I don't think they'd play him if they felt there was a risk, but from the perception point of view, it does sit a little bit uncomfortably with me.
Yeah, hard to add anything to that, really. I would echo everything that Rod said. None of us are doctors, and the James Ryan and Caelan Doris examples are brilliant because that just shows how well the players in Ireland are, you know, how well they're looked after. But I kind of put myself in the shoes that if you were a casual observer of rugby and, you know, you're only tuning into the games and you see Calvin Nash, like, it was a really sickening collision that he took. It was a heavy blow. If you watched that game last week and tuned in again this weekend, I think without knowing anything, you'd be stunned to see him back out 7 days later. But look, like Rod said, obviously he's passed all the necessary protocols. I was surprised that he was there on Tuesday as well. Look, not all injuries are like for like, but you look at the way Kieran Frawley was handled this week. He went back to Leinster, is my understanding. So even though he wasn't ruled out earlier in this week, there was no chance that he was going to be playing because he was back in Leinster. But yeah, I suppose it's a boost in that regard because Andy Farrell wants to give the guys who played last week a chance to right some wrongs. And unfortunately for Calvin Nash, what did he get? 3-4 minutes is all he got. So he gets a chance now again from the start.
And he's gone back as well to the 5-3 split on the bench. Harry Byrne is on there, Conor Murray's on there, and obviously Gary Ringrose is on there as well. Is that the right decision to make, obviously, with Frawley?
Frawley's the big factor there. Potentially the opposition as well. Maybe he feels like he doesn't need it. Like, I am a fan of the 6-2, even having seen what we saw on Twickenham, I think we should stick with it as an idea. I think it gives so much, especially when Ireland have such strength in the back five of the scrum. I think it backfired for two reasons last week. A lot of people have pointed to the backline injuries, but really why it backfired was Peter O'Mahony getting himself yellow carded and Andy Farrell's reluctance to use it. Keane and I were sitting beside each other. We kept saying during the 50 to 60 minute period, where are the subs? Why isn't he bringing them on? And then they started to get ready. O'Mahony, you know, that lineup goes astray. O'Mahony rushes back, he kills the ball, he's sent to the sim bin, and suddenly the cavalry come on and Ryan Baird is basically pacing the sideline like a football manager and waiting for 10 minutes to come on.
We actually said it earlier than that. I remember saying it to you at half time, and I made this point on the pod earlier this week with Luke and Will, that the fact Ireland went into the break in front was so against the run of play, and they did really well, and when they scored the early try, but at half time, I remember saying to you, what does he wait 50 minutes to almost double down on the fact that Ireland have put themselves
especially
in the advantage
after the try. If you brought them all on just after the try, like, that's what I mean. It's almost because Caelan Doris had spoken during the week about the energy he draws from seeing them come on. Mm-hmm. I think, like, sorry, I know you've already done, we've had two podcasts relitigating Twickenham, but like even the personnel changes, I heard the point you made on the pod yesterday was very good, that like, why did Doris not come off? It should have been him coming off and Conan gone on an 8 and leave Josh van der Fleer on, because he was the player who was having more of an effect on the game. Doris wasn't having a great game. So anyway, I think because Frawley isn't there to give you the coverage, if there's an injury, you're having to move Jack Crowley out and play him fullback. That didn't go great against Italy. Harry Byrne is a 10. Even if you watched Leinster a couple of weeks ago, you know, he was playing 12. He's a 10. He's like that. He's a kind of an old fashioned. He's only going to play one position. And Ringrose is such a good player that really you're not losing an awful lot. And he brings energy and power himself. You could bring him on as part of a bomb squad and not lose anything. And even South Africa, the biggest proponents of using a lot of forwards on the bench. For most of the World Cup, they were 5-3. Wasn't it the semi-final against England? They were 5-3. So, because whenever Pollard was on the bench, they went to a 5-3. So you got to be able to play it both ways. So it's not a weakness. I do like the strategy. We'll see it again. But the unchanged team, what do you think? We all put our teams in the paper earlier this week. There was definitely scope for change if you wanted to make change.
Well, I didn't think Nash would make it actually anyway.
So. Yeah, I thought that would have been a guaranteed change. Look, obviously you could have went one or two ways. Like I've mentioned, Andy Farr clearly wants to give the players a chance to make amends, which I think is fair enough because the body of work that they've put together, particularly across the course of the previous games in the Six Nations, winning them all with bonus points. So I totally get that logic. A part of me wouldn't have mind maybe a kick up the ass for a few guys by just one or two changes because
names.
I'm surprised. I actually thought Ian Henderson might have been in with a shout of starting, I have to say, this weekend, and now he doesn't make the 23 at all. I didn't think Joe McCarthy had his best game last week.
Yeah, and you'd flagged that going into the England game.
I actually would have stuck with McCarthy myself, but I do think that he found the going tough. Yeah. That, you know, France was such a magnificent performance. He hasn't got back to that level, and it's hard for a 21-year-old to do that anyway. And England brought it to him. So, yeah, I think he's one that he could have taken out of the team, but maybe he'll benefit from having the arm wrap around him.
Yeah, maybe. I was more so thinking that the line-out hasn't been great. Yeah. I'm sure Scotland are going to come after it. So I thought it might have been an easy enough change, a justifiable change to make if you're bringing a guy like Ian Henderson, who is one of the main line-out leaders. But look, clearly, what do I know? Because the guy isn't even in the 23. And look, he had a bit of a mixed bag when he came off the bench, but it is a horses for courses, I think, when you're looking at the 6-2. I would fully expect we'll see the 6-2 in South Africa again this summer. Again, I think he could have went for it this weekend because when I look at the two teams, I think there's a marked difference between the two packs. And if you had gone with a 6-2, I think you're almost doubling down on that advantage. But by the same token, I can understand why he's gone for the 5-3 because you need backup out half cover. And if you went for a 6-2, it just doesn't really work. And I'd say they were going to be a little bit burnt by what happened last weekend. In saying that, I'm a little bit surprised maybe that Gary Ringrose isn't getting a shot anyway. Look, it's a real hindsight thing, but I think he could have made a difference last weekend in Twickenham. It was interesting this week. We were having a chat about it, Rudd. I thought that Ringrose might come in on the wing, again, assuming that Calvin Nash was going to be ruled out, but Simon Easby pretty much said that they weren't going to do that, didn't he, in his press conference, that he wanted more of an out-and-out winger. Yeah, which would have suggested that Jordan Larmour probably would have been ahead of him in the pecking order. But look, I think Robbie Henshaw has done fine. I didn't think it was his best game in Twickenham, bringing in a fresh Gary Ringrose. Look, you're going to get that off the bench anyway, but I maybe would have liked to have seen him start.
And I suppose, you know, a lot of talk about Peter O'Mahony's performance. There was no way Andy Farr was ever going to drop him, considering the context and all the rest. But obviously with him there, you know, Conor Murray on the bench, you know, it could be one of the last games before we, you know, get the new manager taken over from, or the interim manager, whoever, Simon Easterby, whoever that is, taken over from Andy Farrell, head of the Lions Tour. Could it be one of the final times? Probably not. You know, that they start. Well, that, and he's starting, because Ryan Baird,
he's under massive pressure.
Yeah.
But, you know, you wouldn't write him off at the same time. No. If he has a really strong finish to the season for Munster and he's going well and he's contributing to them, you know, going away from home and big European games and you know, maybe going, you know, he won the URC last year. Could he be part of that again? I'm not writing Peter O'Mahony off. I think on form, Ryan Baird is in better form than him. And I think if he wasn't the captain, he'd be in trouble for a starting spot. But Andy Farrell has always described him as a glue player, someone who, and look, we know his presence, his leadership. But that game last Saturday really passed him by. And I thought England were so dynamic, so fit, so young, so aggressive, so athletic, and he just didn't look like he was able to live in that company. And that's a fear when you're going to the High Veld in the summer or New Zealand coming to town in November, you know. So, like, I would have probably written Johnny Sexton off a little bit in 2020 when he looked off the pace post-World Cup, his first year as captain, as he was grappling with all that sort of stuff. And I got egg on my face with that one. So I'm probably a bit more reticent to do it with O'Mahony, but I think Sexton didn't have the competition that O'Mahony has, and Ryan Baird is one of the form sixes in Europe, and they only had him on the pitch for 8 minutes last week. And that is that a good use of your resources? Now, he doesn't offer the leadership that O'Mahony brings, but I do think it's a live conversation. I think every week it's becoming more and more live, and if it's Baird who goes and blitzes the rest of the season, then O'Mahony's definitely going to be in trouble.
The issue for O'Mahony, apart from the Ryan Baird factor, is, look, the two major strengths to Peter O'Mahony's game right now in his career, at this late stage in his career, are the line-out and leadership. Both of those aspects of the game were off last week. His leadership, look, giving away that yellow card, it was really costly. It was a rush of blood to the head. Can't really argue with it. It was done what was. But the line-out has been a real struggle as well. across the course really of the tournament. You know, we touched on it already, but France obviously had the red cards. Italy didn't compete. Wales caused problems, and England picked three locks and caused problems as well. So that's an area that Scotland are going to go after. But if the reasons you're being picked in the team aren't going well, then I think that adds to the pressure as well. And what's worth discussing in that regard as well is the fact that Ireland going with a 5-3 means Ryan Baird's covering second row this weekend. So we might actually see him come on for Joe McCarthy in the second row, which, look, that would be a huge boost. It would be great to get him on. But I think in terms of going forward long term, I think Ryan Baird is going to be a six at international rugby. So it's a case of getting him into the team, which I understand, but I think he's better suited in the bigger games particularly. I think you can probably get away with it against this Scottish team because they're not the biggest, but I think going forward we'll need to be seeing him at six.
I wrote about Amani during the week and this issue, but like I wouldn't, you know, I think we got to remember that South Africa won the World Cup with two 36, 37 year olds in the back row as well. So like there is a scope for older players to play a big role. Maybe it's not week on week, maybe it's more maybe, I mean, and the captaincy probably means that he has to play. Whereas if he wasn't captain, they could probably use him more judiciously and pick the games that they want to pick him in or give him a bench role sometimes and use his experience and not rush him out the door. Because that's not what I'm trying to do. But I think you're right, Keane. Like, Baird at second row, he's still able to do some of the stuff. But I don't know if you could bring Ryan Baird on at second row because he's not a tight head lock. And I think Joe McCarthy's going 80 this weekend. You know, I think I have a feeling that Joe McCarthy and Ty Burner going 80 if they stay fit, because ideally what you do is what you've done in all the other games. You bring the two lads on in the back row and you charge the other two with going 80. So maybe Scotland don't have the threats to kind of, you know, to undermine the lack of bulk in that pack, but or maybe Baird can play up to a level. But it's
two
not
locks
really
going
strength.
80 would be pretty good, like, wouldn't it? I mean, that'd be impressive to get 80.
They're both fit though, you know. McCarthy's young and Baird's just, sorry, Ty Byrne is unbelievably fit. But it would be, no, absolutely. And like Byrne has put together a body work in this tournament. They, you know, McCarthy's come off in a lot of games. But I think if you're playing to your strengths, you leave those guys out there and you don't have to bring Ryan Baird on. Because whenever he's played second row for Ireland before, I need to check this, but I'm pretty sure he's had James Ryan alongside him or someone like that.
This is the kind of game though that, you know, last week, and I was writing about it in the build-up that, you know, Joe McCarthy was going up against Marwa Toje. And look, England put a target on his back, and you'd have to give credit to how well George Martin and Ollie Chessam played as well. And it worked really well, but this is the type of game where you need to see Joe McCarthy, I think, stamping his authority on it. He's been picked for a reason. He's been outstanding for Leinster this season. He started the campaign so well in Marseille, but I would agree with Rod, he hasn't quite hit those heights yet. And if he's able to do it in a cauldron like Marseille, albeit with one of the French locks, Paul Willemse, being sent off, he's well capable of, you know, fronting up against this Scottish team. So I'm looking forward to seeing how he does, because look, he's still only 22. He's going to have tough days, that's part and parcel of it, but not that he has a point to prove, will be a little bit strong, but you know, he's got Ryan Baird, like we said, on the bench, so I think he needs a big performance too.
Okay, well, let's just hear what Andy Farrell had to say at today's press conference.
Were you keen to give the guys from last week an opportunity to get back out there and put things right this week?
That's a small part of it. What's the best for this weekend, and what's the best side to take the field for this occasion and for this opposition is another part of it as well. I suppose there's a little bit of me learn from past experience that sometimes when people are disappointed, you tend to get a good reaction out of them as well. I suppose Scotland are hoping for the same in that regard as well, so it all adds up to that 15. I suppose the 23 is a bit different though.
What message would you have for anyone who's concerned by seeing Calvin Nash play after the hit he took last week, particularly maybe for beating Gunners and the HIA process?
I would understand that, but if you're in the inner circle and you understand the process that these players have to go through now, you'd thoroughly back that process. He's gone through it with flying colours, and he never looked like failing it for 1 second. And two, the process I think is very sound. Accumulating a few days of getting to the next stage, passing them flying colours, and having a conversation, an interview, a wellness type appointment with an independent doctor today, and there's been no issues there, so all's good to go.
It seems like it hasn't been the easiest few days for certain players on the back of maybe receiving abusive messages and hateful messages online. Is it something that you've been aware of?
Yes, and everyone would be lying if they said that they hadn't, but you know, I suppose that's been the way of the world for some time now, actually, hasn't it, really, in regards to social media, etc. We've battened down the hatches, really, as far as our concentration on what we need to do to improve our performance and make sure that we're the best of ourselves. And come Tuesday afternoon after the training session, and then a big session on Wednesday as well, seems to be that the focus is right where it should be. For everyone that's connected with Irish rugby, the history shows you that this is very hard to do, back-to-back championships, and that's what we're going after, and that's a responsibility that we've got in front of our face, and it's one that we'll relish, grab a hold of, hopefully, not just as a group of 23 that's going to attack the field, but the team that's going to represent the rest of the squad and the fans, the supporters and the people of Ireland alike. You know, hopefully we can all pull together to make it a special day on Saturday.
So what are we expecting from Scotland this weekend? I mean, they still seem to find creative new ways of messing up Six Nations championships, but build a case for them like you did last week for England.
I wish I'd kind of stuck with my England. You know, I was kind of convinced myself, but I didn't follow through.
They burned you too often in the past.
Yeah, they had. I mean, Scotland burned their own fans so often. You know, I mean, they're a curious team. Like, they're like almost a throwback to the amateur days in terms of they're so inconsistent. You know, they're like the Ireland team of the probably the 2000s. You know, who in fairness picked off a couple of triple crowns, which Scotland haven't been able to do, but were able to give big performances, but would always throw in one or just come up short. And to beat England by 9 points and say all the right things about this isn't a big deal for us, and then to go and lose to Italy, an improving Italy team at home, all of the other factors, deserved win. But there's a mental fragility there that I don't, you know, that I think if you listen to the Scottish media this week, you're picking up on as well. There's a bit of desperation in that Scottish group now. Like Finn Russell, these players, you know, Stuart Hogg's already gone. They've won nothing. Like, there's a big prize there for them. I think a triple crown for them is a big prize. Yeah. It's a bit of a once-off. It's a bit of a free hit. And I think that makes them a little bit more dangerous. I think their kicking game, their tactical kicking game is very good, or has been very good. And when they were playing a bit tighter in the poorer conditions at the start of the tournament, it almost suited them. Russell picked his moments. They would need to produce a forward display of the likes we've never seen, certainly against Ireland, from this Scottish team. But like, they've got all the motivation. Like, they hate Ireland. Like, they're really, the relationship between these two teams is fairly testy. And Ireland, you know, Scotland have given Ireland loads of ammo over the years, as Ty Burns said the other day. But I would say on the pitch, Ireland have given Scotland plenty of ammo as well. So they're not shy of motivation. They have a very good 10 who I think has had a very good tournament, who can pin Ireland into corners and can make tactical decisions. There's more experience than Jack Crowley. They have, I think, Tuatha Lopa is a big loss, but they still have, you know, Stafford McDowell's a good player. They have a good bit of continuity behind the scrum with a lot of Glasgow players. They have good players. I just wonder whether their tie five or even their back five, their entire pack.
Yeah, can they bring that pressure game?
They can attack Ireland's ruck and do what England did at the breakdown, but I just don't see them being able to go after Ireland in enough areas in Dublin to be able to do what England did last week.
On the niggle, we should definitely, well, I think celebrate the niggle. I think it's absolutely
brilliant. Oh,
bring it
on. I'm here for it.
The rivalry is brilliant. Obviously, it goes back to Munster and Glasgow and stuff. And look, I know some people will say it's not what we want to see in the game, but I particularly like it, I have to say. But yeah, like, that is the big concern, I suppose, from a Scottish point of view. Even I was just, before we started recording, I was having a flick back through the World Cup game, and I'd almost forgotten how utterly dominant Ireland were. I mean, 36-0 up. I know Scotland scored 2 late consolation tries, but they did an absolute number on them. It was similar enough in Japan at the World Cup in 2019 when they just beat them up front. So that's why I was making a point earlier that Farrell could have went with the 6-suit, almost double down on that, because that's where I see the big difference between the two teams this weekend. They brought Ben White back as well as Stafford McDowell into the side. Yeah. He'll make a difference. at scrum half. He was given last weekend off, I think, managing his load from playing in the top 14 with Toulon as well. So there's no doubt that the backs have, you know, have the capability of hurting Ireland. I totally agree with you. I think Tui Pilato is a massive loss. And I think, you know, Stafford McDowell, with all the will in the world, is a significant downgrade, I would say, in that. Cam Redpath played a 12 last week. He finds himself dropped to the bench. So it's if whether or not the pack can give them the platform to hurt them, because if they can, then they're definitely capable of it. But I think it's definitely a big if. This is the kind of game where I think Ireland will look to put the squeeze on up front. Their maul didn't really get going at all last week. England did a number on it. You know, there are times when we go into games with maybe slight concerns, I would still say, over the Irish scrum. This isn't one of them, those days where I would have concerns.
I actually thought they were dominant at Twickenham. They didn't get the reward, but they were the better.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting watching on Sunday. This is a bit of an aside, but like the referees, I think, have been told to not let the ball stay in the scrum, to get it out, not let scrums go on too long. You know, we saw that with the, you know, France had utter dominance over Wales, but weren't allowed to make it pay. Ireland a couple of times had gone chasing.
They had one in the second half where, I don't know how, it was spilled out to Doris, I think it was.
Yeah,
remember?
He had to attack down
like
the
how
side.
That wasn't a penalty.
Yeah, but if Doris had kept that in, I think it squirts out the second rows and he just picks it up on the run. But that's one of those little moments that got away from Ireland. But I don't know if they'll be allowed to make that pay. I think we have to be a little bit concerned about Ireland's form. Like, I know we all say, you know, I was guilty of sailing until last week. Even their discipline, I wrote a piece about it during the week. Like, I'd noticed it before last week's game and I thought it was quirky, but now I'm like, well, actually, that was a red flag. I should have been. That was a canary in the coal mine. Now, a lot of the penalties they conceded, they conceded
45 penalties.
Yeah, more than they did
since 2013. Yes.
Yeah. And
we know how that tournament.
Yeah, but that was, And you know, a lot of them were from winning positions. So they're kind of killing the game, I think, or whenever the teams are coming back at them, they were kind of doing it from a position where they're trying to just keep the other team at arm's length. They've picked up a couple of yellow cards and they've probably fallen into some bad habits against England.
Yeah, what does that point to, you think?
Well, I think a little bit of complacency, a little bit of, you know, they got the job done in Marseille and thought they were grand, and obviously they're still betting in new players.
They're being ultra aggressive with the breakdown, I think, as well. They need to just dial that back a little bit, pick your moments a little bit better, you know.
But we're also asking them to go out and dominate Scotland physically, so it's a hard balance to strike. Yeah. But Ty Byrne was talking about it during the week. He said, like, we've talked about it in every meeting. Mm-hmm. We tried to address it and they're not addressing it. And the penalty count was lower against England, but all of the penalties they gave away, the scoreline was within 4 points, and they were compounding errors as well. I mean, when you look back on the Italy and the Wales game, like, there were big wins, but really they weren't brilliant performances. They were good. They were impressive and effective, but there was loads of bits in it that they were just getting by because they were up against teams they were way better than. And then England brought something to them, and the level they were at just wasn't able to get back up to it. And they nearly won the game, but I do think that Ireland could do with finishing the tournament as they started. I expected them to get to that level last weekend, but I think their form line has dipped. I thought we got the World Cup Ireland against France, and they've kind of tailed off a little bit. And like, they're still good enough to be in the game going in, down the stretch against England, playing at, you know, 50-60% of their capacity. But like, with a title on the line, home crowd, all that stuff on Saturday, I would like to see them deliver a real statement performance.
I just think they had such a point to prove against France in Marseille, being billed as the World Cup final that never was, that it was just going to be natural almost down, or looking back, you know, since then, which is one of the problems with having such a big game as well at the start of the tournament. But what do you think that ill discipline is down to, Keane?
Yeah, I just touched on it there. I think they've been ultra aggressive at the breakdown, and like Rudd said, it's, you know, it's about striking the right balance. I think we've seen that with Jack Nienaber since he's come into Leinster. Dennis Leamy has done the same at Munster this season. It's been one of the big focuses. I remember I was down a few weeks ago in Limerick chatting to Dennis Leamy about this, and he's given the players license to go after the rucks a little bit harder, but you've got to be squeaky clean, obviously, when you do that. So look, it used to be an area of strength for Ireland. It was unheard of to have a yellow card. Is it four yellow cards off the top of my head? Yeah. They've had now four yellow cards. I mean, that's not great. So they can't obviously afford that tomorrow. I think it's going to be interesting to watch their kicking game as well.
Their chase,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So like, they're not going to be facing as aggressive a defence as England brought last week. But I was writing about this today, and thanks to our friends in Opta who gave me the stat that last weekend was the first game since Opta started recording stats in 2010 that Ireland didn't put a grubber kick, a chip kick or a crossfield kick in, which to me beggared belief against a blitz defence. Yeah. And I was making this point in the build-up that how well Jack Crowley kicked against Exeter before Christmas, that was a key point of Munster getting around the blitz. So as I was watching the game back, I was kind of wondering why they didn't do it. But then when I saw it in black and white, that they didn't have any of those kicks since 2010. And it could go back further. It's just that Opta only started collating the stats in 10. I thought was really stark. So I'm expecting Jack Crowley to have a bit more.
Yeah, will there be space there? Obviously, that
Scotland leave a lot of space in their backfield. They absolutely do. So I'd be shocked. That's one for listeners to watch out on. They do tend to leave a lot of space. I'd be very surprised if we don't see a grubber or a kick chip over the top.
And I think every team Ireland face now will be like, will see what England did on the, off the back of those deep James Lowe kicks and try it themselves. And Scotland, although he has never played well against Ireland, really do have one of the best broken field counter-attacking players in the world, and Duhan van der Merwe, who, if given the kind of space that Tommy Freeman and Faye Bosa got on counter-attack last week, he could cause untold damage. So
did I see somewhere that he's never scored against Ireland though?
Yeah, well, but there's a first time for everything. Yeah. And if you give him the ball in that sort of space and he's just seeing what can happen, he might not score, but he'll do damage. And like Blair Kinghorn, very different kind of player, but he's a good counter-attacking player, very good heads up, good kicking game. Finn Russell's a very good kicker of the ball as well. There is
Hugh Jones, dangerous.
Yeah, like there are dangerous players in that Scotland team. So Ireland do need to perform. And I think I'm probably lurching the other way a bit in terms of having tipped Ireland so heavily last week that you're kind of trying to kind of almost check yourself this week. But I do think that if Ireland played the same way, if Ireland bring the same performance, and Scotland have obviously watched it and picked up things, then if Ireland haven't fixed up those things that went wrong last weekend, Scotland will make a bit of hay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's just quickly go to the other games before we get your predictions on that. So Wales against Italy at 2:15 on Saturday. Obviously, Ireland against Scotland here at the Aviva Stadium at 4:45, and France against England at 8:00. Will Italy and England finish with away wins, do you think?
I think Italy have a great chance. Capuazzo is a massive loss and really disappointing not to see him playing. Georgia North's last game for Wales, like there's going to be huge emotion around that. We saw how England last week fed off Danny Kerr's 100 caps. So I think that's going to be a big motivating factor for Wales as well. And earlier this week, before Georgia North announced his retirement, I was not confidently at all, but I was pretty optimistic that Italy might win. Now I've kind of dialed it back a little bit because I think that is actually going to be a huge factor for Wales, but I think Italy are definitely well capable of it.
Like, if we think Scotland are fragile mentally, like Italy have such poor history in this tournament, and they've just won and drawn a game. Is this the first time ever they've got a record like that? Certainly the first time in an awful long time.
That they haven't lost two games.
They haven't lost two games. So they either double down on that and they go and win a third, get a third result, or they go, job done, off the card, give it a lash, and Wales, with all that emotion that Keane talks about, produce a performance that they need because they're a proud rugby nation and they've got the factors that are there. Like, Italy have kind of won their Six Nations already by winning a home game in front of a packed stadium in Rome. That was their emotional performance, and the only thing you would say about it is it was a very controlled performance, a very mature performance, and they have very, very good players. One of them's missing, but I find it very hard to call actually this game. I think Italy are a better team than Wales, and if you put them on a neutral venue in 2 weeks' time, they probably beat them, but I think they probably are a little bit in love with themselves after getting that win last weekend, and Wales are desperate, and desperation is a very powerful force in rugby, but I don't know if this Welsh team are good enough to beat anyone at the moment.
Yeah, I think three home wins for me this week.
I think France will beat England, but I don't say it with a huge degree of confidence. Mm. Again, I just don't know if England can get to that
back
pitch again. And I thought France built something in that second half against the Welsh. They have a huge amount of power. They're a very strong team playing badly. I noticed the dynamics between Galtier and Sean Edwards in the coaching box were terrible. So I don't know how healthy everything is behind the scenes. But at home in Lyon, having drawn their last home game to Italy against England, all the different factors, I see them producing just about enough and getting over the line against an England team who, again, kind of won their Six Nations last weekend.
Yeah, that's the big challenge, obviously, for England, is how they come back up from that emotional high. But, the pressure is off Steve Borthwick to some degree. He's given himself a bit of latitude in terms of getting that win over Ireland and the manner of the performance. It wasn't just beating Ireland. It was that they actually played a little bit more expansively. But Emmanuel Faye Bosa was a big loss for any neutrals as well. He was just sensational last week against Ireland. But I wouldn't back against England. I still think this French team are pretty fragile. Playing out of Paris hasn't obviously worked well for them in this tournament. So I think that's tight to call, but maybe home advantage just about to France.
So I know you said Ireland beat England by 50 points last weekend. What are you going for this?
15, 15, 1-5. What am I going for this week? I think Ireland will win.
What's the spread? I haven't seen.
I haven't looked actually. Yeah. It's funny, I was obsessed with it last week. I haven't looked this week. I think my contention last week was that Ireland will pull away. That will be a tight game for 60 minutes. I can see this being a tight game for 50, 60 minutes as well. And then Ireland breaks Scotland in the end. I don't know if they'll get, they were nervy here last year when there was a Grand Slam on the line. I think they'll put in as much a premium on winning the title. And they've lost a few fairly important tight games or not performed in pretty big finals and stuff, you know, and I think they really could do with a reassuring big performance this weekend. And I think they've got the capacity to deliver it, but they're kind of playing themselves out of form a little bit. They didn't play well last weekend. They kind of got through on fumes and nearly won the game, and they owe it to themselves, and they could do it just reminding everyone how good they are or how good they can be. I think at home they should have more than enough for Scotland, but I don't think it's going to be all straightforward.
Yeah, the point about the Grand Slam is very well made, because they were quite nervy that day last year, even though they did pull away.
This was England though as well.
Yeah, but
I think that made them a bit nervy as well. But I think it's relevant.
It's a factor as well. I still think they'll have too much. I'd be absolutely shocked if Ireland. I'm trying not to fall into the trap, almost like knee jerk reaction to last week. Like, logic would suggest that this Ireland team are considerably better. And like I said, I think the difference will be up front. So I think Ireland will win. Might not be that handy, but they do have, even without the 6-2 bench, a lot of quality to come off.
And another coach would have, you know, made 4 or 5 changes, and he stayed loyal to these players. So they owe him a performance as well.
Yeah.
So, and they owe it to themselves. Like, a couple of them,
big time,
you know, want to keep that jersey. There's a lot of rugby to play between now and the next international. So, I mean, there's a title on the line. That's the sole focus, but there will be individual motivations as well that will drive a bit of a performance and a bit of a response. But it's two teams looking for a response. One of whom has no pressure. Like, Scotland are being utterly written off in their own media, you know, people talking about 40-50 point defeats, you know, so they'll have that bit of motivation. And Ireland need to be ready for every team coming at them as if they should treat every opponent that is going to give their best performance of the tournament against them. And it's a tough place to be, but this is where Ireland need to deliver performance themselves.
Absolutely, Rory and Keane, thank you for that. We'll be back with a podcast after Saturday's game, so chat to you then.